Hello and welcome to this special episode of The Book Show. I'm Claire Nichols and we're featuring interviews with all of the shortlisted authors for the Miles Franklin Award in this special series. Sarah Lestrange is here with me and Sarah, Rodney Hall, he is no stranger to the Miles Franklin.
He is amazing. He has been shortlisted for the award 6 times already as Stolen Season makes the 7th and he's won it twice for his books Just Relations in 1982 and The Grizzly Wife in 1994. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I guess he's really the elder statesman of the shortlist this year. Now, you and I have actually both read his book Stolen Season, which is told in these 3 separate strands.
Yes, but its primary story is about an Iraq War veteran whose body has been damaged beyond repair and he's fitted out in an army-issued exoskeleton after he returns to Melbourne and to his estranged wife.
And you spoke to Rodney about this at the Bendigo Writers Festival.
Yes, and he told me more about this exoskeleton.
He gets an implant in his brain and he can direct the exoskeleton by thinking what he wants. And the technology caught up with me because when I first started writing it, I'd invented the whole thing in my rather laborious way. And then along came the researchers at the Research Institute in Melbourne, the Alfred Hospital, who then published the system that involved this implant. It's a sort of stent thing. So anyway, that's what he is. He's encased in this carbon fibre thing that directs him. And
so why does he need this exoskeleton?
It's a rocket attack in Samarra that he's the subject of. And it struck me, what would happen if you were in that position? Your life was absolutely ruined. He comes back to a marriage that they'd never dissolved. They'd gone there. They were cheerful, happy-go-lucky, young, very young couple, 17 when they marry. And she finds herself delivered a half-person and has to decide what to do about that and packs her bags straight away ready to leave but doesn't and then doesn't and then doesn't and then doesn't.
So, Rodney, she describes him as her monstrosity, hers and hers alone. What does that get to about their relationship and why she stays with him?
As he surrenders, he was a sort of surfer and good time person. As he surrendered all that world, he discovers the life of the brain, the life of the mind. And he begins to find he's got a brain and that it opens up all sorts of riches to him. The exoskeleton allows him to click one digit every 3 seconds.
So he's writing on the computer.
He writes on the computer with 2 fingers and he has to guide the finger and then do this and then do that. And it's very slow and painful. And meanwhile, the mind is absorbing the things he's getting on the screen. And she, on her account, where she's looking for a way out of it, gradually they fall in love with each other, probably for the first time, and is that strand of what's happening.
And Adam really wants to understand why he was sent to Iraq and now why he is so damaged and has been so terribly hurt beyond recognition for a lie. That's what he's trying to figure out.
That's what he's trying to deal with. And, you know, then we get to the sort of structure of the book because I'm one of those writers who I don't plan anything. I start them. And the problem with that is you start lots of books that go nowhere. Sometimes I've found I've written maybe 70 or 80,000 words before I realise this is not ever going to go anywhere, so put it on the shelf.
So how many have you done of those?
I suppose, a rough guess, over a long lifetime, probably 10 or 12 of them.
In terms of the structure, we have the story of Adam and Bridget, and then it flips to the story of Mariana Gluck, and then it flips again to the story of John Philip Hardingham. Now, those 3 strands are completely unrelated, except till the end when certain strands come together. When did you decide to put those strands together?
Well, that's the point, Sarah. I didn't actually decide to do it. I was writing away the way I do. I got the first two chapters as it is now, but a long, let's say, 60-page chapter about Adam and Bridget. And then what came along was an Australian woman in Belize who's planning to climb a decayed Mayan pyramid. And she's running away, and she thinks Interpol are following her, and she's probably right. And so she's got two sections in the book. And the first one, she's settling into this rundown hotel in Belize and at last relaxing and looking back on why she's run away. And in the second one, all she does is climb the monument and get to the top, and that's all she does. But I don't question, but at first when I started writing it, because I just got up one morning and I sort of finished a chapter, and what came to me was this person. So I don't question it. So down she went. And I thought for a day or two, maybe it's a different book, maybe this is a... because I'm having fun with it, and so I'm going to stick with it. But I realised later it wasn't that at all. And what began to emerge... so John Philip Hardingham comes from old wealth. It's an old family merchant bank, 400 years old, living on the luxury of compound interest for 400 years, who's lost all contact with reality, has no idea if anyone likes him, no idea who he is. At 60, he's no idea, absolutely none. His life's been destroyed. And the title of Stolen Season, each of these four characters in three strands, each of the four characters seizes on a stolen season for themselves. John Philip's life was ruined by too much money. Mariana's was ruined by a swindler husband. Adam's was ruined by an unjust war. And they all seize the chance to get themselves back, their own selves. And what emerged through it was a sort of theme that I don't spell out for the reader. But it's the idea. The idea came to me that looking at the Mayan pyramid, this was a monument which, for all we know, people were systematically slaughtered on. They were sacrificed on. It was a sacrificial monument. And it occurred to me that in our own times, whoever we are, any given time, we probably don't see what that sacrificial monument is. If we're living with it, it's too big. It's what you do. So the enslaved people who built those Mayan temples probably thought that's what life is. You kind of build a temple and you're whipped to do it, to work harder, but that's what life is. And similarly for us, the sacrificial temple, as I have it in the book, is the unregulated banking system that delivered us the global financial crisis, that we live that system because that's the system we've got. And so I don't ever kind of spell it out, but I want these three strands of the book to interact with each other so that you go into a completely different world for each of them. They're all Melbourne-based, but nonetheless you go into a different world for each of them.
And Rodney, is it that you want to jolt the reader out of the story to think about these things, to think about the connections?
Yeah, I think I don't underestimate the value of surprise. I mean, it irritates a lot of readers. They think, what is this? Why don't you get on and tell the story? I'm actually not interested in stories. I think we've got a plague of stories, frankly. A story is a dangerous form. It's a very good form, and it's a very
dangerous
old
form.
Yes, because it kids us into thinking that we can summarise a life or whatever it is into a neat string of interconnected events, and life isn't like that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. There's some words of wisdom from Rodney Hall speaking to Sarah Lestrange. Rodney's novel, A Stolen Season, has been shortlisted for the Miles Franklin. Good luck to Rodney. And to take us out today, here's Dan Sultan.
God help me. Keep pulling me in, tearing at each part of me. Don't tell me that you think this is it, 'cause this isn't it for me.